Idast tashtu samchaya vanaspat yosadi lata tvakshara virudo drumaha. Translation. The seventh creation is that of the immovable entities, which are of six kinds. The fruit trees without flowers, trees and plants which exist until the fruit is ripe, creepers, pipe plants, creepers which have no support, and trees with flowers and fruits. Text 20. Utsro tasas samapaya antasparsha visheshinaha. Translation. All the immovable trees and plants seek their substance upwards. They are almost unconscious, but have feelings of pain within. They are manifested in variegatedness. Text 21. And this one we'll chant together. Tiraskam ashtamaha sarga. Tiraskam ashtamaha sarga. So stavim sadvido mataha. So stavim sadvido mataha. Avido buddhi tamaso. Avido buddhi tamaso. Grihana gyahrid yavedinaha. Grihana gyahrid avedinaha. Tiraskam ashtamaha sarga. So stavim sadvido mataha. Avido buddhi tamaso. Grihana gyahrid yavedinaha. Vaishnavis. Tiraskam, species of lower animals. Ashtamaha, the eighth. Sarga, creation. Sa, they are. Astavim Sat, 28. Bidaha, varieties. Mataha, considered. Avidaha, without knowledge of tomorrow. Buddhi, extensively. Tamasaha, ignorant. Grihana, gya, can know desirables by smell. Riddhi, avedinaha, can remember very little in the heart. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. The eighth creation is that of the lower species of life, and they are of different varieties, numbering 28. They are all extensively foolish and ignorant. They know their desirables by smell, but are unable to remember anything within the heart. Purport. In the Vedas, the symptoms of the lower animals are described as follows. Ate tadesham pasunaha asana pipase eva bivi vigyananam na vigyatam vedanti na vigyatam pasyanti na vidu svastanam na loka lokav iti yad va buddhi tamaso Bahu Rushaha Grihane Naiva Janati Ridyam Pati Swapriyam Vastveva Vindati Bojana Sayanad Yartam Grinanti. Quote, lower animals have knowledge only of their hunger and thirst. They have no acquired knowledge, no vision. Their behavior exhibits no dependence on formalities. Extensively ignorant, they can know their desirables only by smell, and by such intelligence only can they understand what is favorable and unfavorable. Their knowledge is concerned only with eating and sleeping. Close quote. Therefore, even the most ferocious lower animals, such as tigers, can be tamed simply by regularly supplying meals and accommodations for sleeping. Only snakes cannot be tamed by such an arrangement. Omagana tamadam dasha jananjana shalakaya chakshudan melitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhistam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa gadamayam dadati swapadantikam. So here in the translation, it's mentioned that the eighth creation was the lower species, and there are different varieties, numbering 28. And so I always thought that there was 8 million, you know, because that figure that we're all very familiar with, 8,400,000 species, and there's 400,000 human species, so everything other than the human species are lower species. Anyway, I asked Rudakarma about it. He said sometimes there's different ways things are classified, and just like you have, sometimes you hear, referring to the planetary systems, the three worlds. Sometimes we hear seven worlds. Sometimes you hear 14 worlds. So sometimes things are classified in different ways. So this, don't worry about it. It's okay. Just a different way of classifying the lower species. So here in the purport, in the very last sentence, Prabhupada says, only snakes cannot be tamed by such an arrangement. He's referring to, he says, that even the most ferocious lower animals, such as tigers, can be tamed by simply by regularly supplying meals and accommodations for sleeping. Only snakes cannot be tamed by such an arrangement. So do any of our uninitiated listeners here know the reason why that is? The people who are uninitiated. Anybody know what the reason is? Why snakes are an exception to that rule? They can't be tamed? Huh? Yeah, right. That's the reason. They're very envious. They just have such an envious nature that despite the fact that somebody's feeding them and giving them a place to live like that, they're nature just gets the better of them, and they can't appreciate it. There's a story where Prabhupada got some realization on this point. Prabhupada tells a story about when He was a new man at that time, and he was visiting his spiritual master's Math temple in Ulthodanga. That was, you know, like a suburb of Calcutta. So Prabhupada came into the courtyard. It wasn't a real big place, but you know, I don't know the actual size. But Prabhupada came into the courtyard, and there was a bunch of his, at that time, prospective god brothers. He wasn't initiated yet. They were in the courtyard too, and they saw a cobra. And the cobra was kind of, you know, not like right on top of Prabhupada, but close enough, close enough. And so they were, you know, the devotees, disciples were there. Prabhupada was there. Prabhupada was the person closest to the cobra. And they looked up to, the disciples looked up. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj happened to be on the veranda there. Or maybe they yelled out to him. I don't know. I can't remember the detail. But so he came out on the veranda. And, you know, they were looking up like, okay, what do we do, you know? And he said, kill it. And they all took sticks. You know, the disciples took sticks and they, you know, surrounded it and, you know, whap, 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 whap. They just repeatedly kind of hit it with the stick until they killed it. And so, of course, Prabhupada was relieved because, you know, he was out of danger. But it left a doubt in his mind. He himself says that. But years later, when he was reading the Bhagavatam, he came across a verse in the seventh canto, and I think it's in the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, where it's mentioned that the Sanskrit is modeta sadhu api vrishchika sarpahacha, which means that even a saintly person, even a sadhu, is happy, takes pleasure when a scorpion or a snake is killed. And that's the reason, Mataji gave the reason, because they're just so envious that you just might as well kill them, because if you don't, they just, with no provocation, they will, you know, harm some other living entity. A godbrother of mine told me a story, an anecdote, which he says he heard from Prabhupada, and I'll take his word for it. There's a lot of things that Prabhupada said that aren't recorded or aren't in the books, but he was with Prabhupada on one occasion, and he heard Prabhupada tell this story, that there was a camel. And he was kind of on the banks of the, hanging out on the bank of the river, and he was approached by a scorpion. And the scorpion asked him, could you give me a lift across the river? Because camels know how to swim, and scorpions don't. So the camel said, come on, you kidding? You're a scorpion. I'm not going to give you a ride across the river. I know what will happen. You'll bite me. And the scorpion said, no, wait, logically. If I'm on your back, right, I don't swim. I can't swim. We're going across the river. And if I'm on your back and I bite you, you're going to drown. And if you drown, I drown. So there's no way I'm going to bite you. So the camel thought about it. And he thought, yeah, okay, that's logical. Okay, all right, come on. I'll, you know, hop on. So he hops on his back, and the camel's swimming across the river. Kind of right in the middle of the river, and all of a sudden the camel feels this like sharp pinching sensation in his back.
What's up? What's the name of the song?
Which song?
Animal.
Have Mercy on the Animals. And he feels this sharp pinching sensation on his back, and he goes, whoa, what's going on? What are you doing? And he looks around, and the scorpion's biting him. You know, he says, what are you doing? He said, you wouldn't. He said, you know, why are you biting me? Now both are going to drown. And the scorpion goes, well, after all, I am a scorpion. So this is nature. He couldn't help it. He, you know, despite the fact that he would, despite the fact that he gave his word, he wouldn't. And despite the fact that he himself was going to die now, he couldn't help it. That's how powerful it was. So that's, snakes are in that category too, you know. So that's the story there. Prabhupada told us. Well, yeah, good. That's a good point.
That's a good point,
which I don't know the answer to, because I don't know. I can't think of a Shastric thing, but definitely poisonous snakes would be in that category, and scorpions are in that category. We could maybe do some research on that point later. Then Prabhupada tells one other, just around the point of envy. There's one story Prabhupada tells where about how there's these two old friends, they meet, and after a long time, and one old friend says to the other, "Hey, did you know that so-and-so became a high court judge?" And the other friend says, "No. Arvind Patel? No, no way. He could never become a high court judge." And the first friend says, "No, no, for real. He has. I saw him." So you saw him? He says, "Yes, I saw him on the bench of the high court, as a high court judge bench." And the first friend goes, "Wow, really?" He said, and then he thought about it for a second. He said, "Well, I'm sure he does not get any salary." So anyway, just another on envy, just a little comic relief there. So the main point is, and Prabhupada says here in the last sentence of the purport, second to last sentence, that most ferocious lower animals, such as tigers, can be tamed simply by regularly supplying meals and accommodations for sleeping. Well, I don't know exactly. I mean, I think my information is accurate, but I've been told that the way they train those tigers, yeah, it's true that they do tame them by simply regularly supplying meals, but the regular supplying of meals is like once a month. And it's basically they starve them. Yeah, it's true. They give them a place to be, a cage, you know, and they supply them regular meals, but very infrequently. So much so that they, as I said, they practically starve them to death. And so they get so weak, and in that weakened condition, they're able to get them to do whatever. So anyway, the point being that, we don't want to be an animal. You don't want to become an animal. From just what we heard described here, it doesn't sound like it's a lot of fun to be an animal. It's not exactly, animals aren't exactly experiencing Sat, Chit, and Ananda, an eternal blissful life of knowledge, you know. It sounds like it's a pretty miserable life. And aside from that, they don't get treated very well, you know. Animals, say an animal said, "Well, anyway, okay, I know it's not the greatest, but I'm happy being an animal. I don't mind. I like eating and sleeping, so I'm satisfied being an animal." But no, there's no guarantee you're going to even be left alone to just enjoy your animal eating and animal sleeping, because the human beings are enemies of the animals. You know, there was one pastime where Narada Muni was traveling, and he came across in the forest all these animals that were like half killed, and he said, "What's going on here?" You know, and finally he met this hunter. He saw this hunter, and he realized that the hunter was responsible for this. And he asked him, "Well, what are you doing? Why are you just half killing these animals?" And he said, "Well, you know, my name is Magrari. I'm the enemy of the animals." Magrari actually means enemy of the animals. Mrig is animal. Ari means enemy. So my name is Magrari. I don't know if it was his nickname or his given name by his parents or whatever, but enemy of the animals. And I take pleasure in half killing these animals. And Narada Muni said to him, "No, that's bad. This is like a big sin." And Murugari said, "Sin? What is sin?" He didn't even know what it was. He had no conception of that he was doing something wrong. And Narada Muni explained to him and gave him a vision to see what would happen if he continued doing that. He had a vision of how these same animals were coming back to, you know, get revenge kind of thing. So that and the combination of that and Narada Muni's association, he had a transformation in consciousness, and he became a devotee, actually. And, he became a disciple of Narada Muni, and he went on to become a great devotee, famous devotee. Unfortunately, his sampradaya still exists, and it's the rest of the human race. This human race is just like the Magrari sampradaya before he surrendered and became a devotee, because we're just enemies of the animals. You know, especially you name an animal, and the human race is an enemy of that animal. All the animals that are going to be named here in these subsequent verses of, cows, goats, buffalo, deer, lamb, human beings are just either kill them for food or hunt them for sport or something. We're the enemies of the animals. So it's not a good idea to be an animal. Now, here's the thing. Here's a point that you could say, okay, sure, I don't want to be an animal. But if you want to, if somebody seriously wants to avoid being an animal, you have to become, it's a good idea to become a devotee. And I'll explain why. Because a soul becomes an animal as a result of bad karma. You know, if somebody engages in a lot of sinful activities, the karmic reaction for that is you can become an animal. That's among other different karmic reactions that are possible there. Certainly that's one of them. So if you're a human being in the Kali Yuga, the atmosphere is so surcharged with sinful life. You know, it's like as soon as you step outside, step off this block, you're bombarded with advertisements and enticements and, you know, to engage in sinful activity. It's just the most common thing to engage in sinful activity in the Kali Yuga. Illicit sex, meat, intoxication, gambling. See? So, and those are the activities, when, if engaged in, can lead one towards becoming an animal in their next life. See? So thinking you could be, not thinking that somebody, oh, I could not be a devotee and become free from sinful activities in the Kali Yuga, you know, here in, at least here in America, you know, West, this time and, you know, place and time, is like thinking you could jump in the Ganges River, when, you know, which has a current, and stay in the same place. Now, if you get dumped in the Ganges River, it's got a current. It's going to push you downstream, you know. And the same way, when you leave the association of devotees, when you're not engaged in the association of devotees in devotional service, you're just going to be swept away by the current of Maya. And you'll engage in those activities, and you're a candidate for becoming an animal in your next life. And just to kind of elaborate on that analogy again, imagine if you did get dumped, just somehow you fell off a boat, you lost your balance, and you fell in the Ganges River. So even you try to swim upstream, it's not powerful. You might not be able to do it, because you'd have all your clothes on and everything. You need like a power boat. You need a boat that's kind of going in the opposite direction to throw you a line, and you got to grab onto that line, and it can pull you in, you see? That's like the Hare Krishna movement. So the powerful thing is engaging in devotional service. But something that supports engaging in devotional service is a lifestyle in the mode of goodness. And I'll explain. Just like in that example of you fall in the Ganges River and the boat comes along and throws you a line and you grab onto it. Well, even holding on to that, you want to cut down on your drag. You know, if you possibly can, you want to take off your Nike sneakers, kick them off, you know. If you're wearing a big jacket or something like that, see if you can wiggle out of it. Because the more drag you have, I mean, the boat will be power enough to pull you. But if you have too much clothing on and stuff, you might not be strong enough to hold on to the tow rope, because you're creating so much drag by all the stuff you got on. So in that analogy, it's like we might take to Krishna consciousness, but if you're trying to simultaneously hang on to all your material attachments, you know, if you're trying to engage in being a devotee, but at the same time keeping attachments to intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling like that, it's going to be hard to hold on to the Hare Krishna movement. You see, the Hare Krishna movement is trying to pull people out of the material world, but you got to let go of those attachments. You know, that helps. You know, just like that person in that example, he'd be wise to wiggle out of his jacket, kick off his Nikes, and drop the cell phone and whatever else you got going, and just hang on for dear life and get pulled back onto the boat. So there's a connection there. It's a subsidiary point, but it's worth mentioning. Just like Prabhupada, sometimes here in the morning, if those of you are here right after the 10 offenses and they put on the japa tape, not every morning, but some mornings we put it on there, and you hear Prabhupada say, sit properly. So that's not a part of devotional service. Sitting properly is not devotional service, but it's something that supports devotional service in this sense, that in the third canto, in Lord Kapila's instructions, I think it's the chapter is called Instructions on Devotional Service, actually. It's Lord Kapila instructing his mother, Devahuti. Prabhupada explains in one purport that sitting properly, which means sitting with the head, back, and neck erect, for some people that's easier than others. I have to always really work at it. But it's Prabhupada said it helps one concentrate the mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in other words, there's a sense in which the mind follows the body. We know the body follows the mind, but there's also, it works both ways. So there's a sense in which the mind follows the body. See, if you, so you sit in that proper way, you know, with your head, back, and neck erect. It just, the human body is designed in such a way that you're going to be able to feel more attentive and energized and be able to kind of concentrate more on your chanting like that. So to expanding upon that in the same way, that you have to sit properly, you have to live properly, you see? If you're living properly means living without engaging in illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, gambling. It's like sitting properly, you know, it's just kind of, it's the right way to, just like when you sit the right way, it helps you chant. When you live the right way, meaning free from those activities, it helps you, it supports you in your attempt to be a devotee. And so that's important. Okay, now another point is, so we don't want to be an animal, that's for sure. Hopefully everybody, I was successful at convincing everybody it's not a good idea to become an animal. But we also, we want to show mercy. As devotees, we want to show mercy to animals. And we do. You know, our lifestyle is such that, you know, we're vegetarians. And a significant part of the reason is because we don't want to be involved in an eating process that involves unnecessary cruelty to other living entities. You know, live and let live as much as possible. Devotees think like that. And so that's there. And Prabhupada was an advocate of that. There's a very famous conversation that Prabhupada had, I think it was 1974. It was in Paris, and Yogeshwar, the devotees there, they arranged for Prabhupada to meet this highly placed person in the Catholic Church. His name was Cardinal Danilou. And you could watch it. It's on YouTube, the video. At least not the whole thing, but a good part of it, about half an hour's worth, is on YouTube. So they were talking, and Prabhupada brought up this point. It was nice. You know, there wasn't like a screaming, yelling match or something like that. They were talking like gentlemen, you know. And Prabhupada brought up this point about, let me see if I can get my references here. Okay, yeah, so Prabhupada brought up this point that in the Bible it says, thou shalt not kill. And it says, why is it that the people, the followers of Christ are, you know, killing? It's sinful. And his response was that actually our understanding is only human life is sacred, and that animals are meant to for service to human beings. You know, only human beings have the capacity for like a metaphysical, you know, study of life like that. Anyway, that was his point. But then Prabhupada responded, yeah, but it says in the Bible, and Jesus said, thou shalt not kill. And then he responded, well, there's many sacrifices of animals in the Bible. And and Prabhupada said, so you think to kill an animal is no sin? And then he repeated, same thing, that their life is not sacred, human life is sacred. And then Prabhupada said, that is an interpretation. Jesus Christ said generally, thou shalt not kill. So the man said, this cardinal said, he said, that's not a text of Jesus, but of the Old Testament. It's from Leviticus, where the Ten Commandments are. And Prabhupada said, okay, but one of those commandments is thou shalt not kill. So, you know, I mean, it's not like you're supposed to disregard the commandments. It might be the Ten Commandments, and Jesus didn't directly say it, but it's still something. I mean, Jesus did say, I've come to fulfill the commandments, not to destroy them. So it's something, you know, people should be following. And he, same thing, he responded, God gave the animals for eating. You know, that was the same thing. Only human life is sacred and animal life is not, and, you know, like that. So then Prabhupada tried to get through to him with an analogy. He said, you know, if you're living in a house and I come into that house and I break into the house and I break up the house and, you know, cause you a lot of trouble and inconvenience like that, he said, isn't that sinful? You know, isn't that criminal? Is the word he used. Isn't that criminal? And the man could go, he could see the point what Prabhupada's making. You know, of course, I'm causing you, and Prabhupada repeated it, you know, I'm causing you inconvenience completely unnecessarily. You're living in a house, I come and I destroy your house. Isn't that criminal? Meaning, like, you know, the soul is living in the animal body, you're coming and destroying it. Isn't that criminal? You're giving it unnecessary, more than inconvenience, pain and suffering, etc. So the man can understand. You know, didn't want to lose the argument. So he went, well, actually, no, it's not. If you had some higher purpose, that's the way he responded. If you're doing it for some higher purpose, and then he goes, just like, you know, some higher purpose. Then Prabhupada goes, but wait, see, with the cow. Then he tried another one. He came in from another angle. He said, well, you know, the cow is like, you get milk from the cow. We get milk from our mother and we get milk from the cow. So the cow's like our mother, right? And the man said, yeah. He agreed with that. You know, we drink the cow's milk. So she's like our mother, right? And the man agreed. And then, don't you think it's sinful to, after your mother gives her last drops of milk, you send her off to the slaughterhouse and kill her? And the man, once again, he didn't want to lose the argument. He said, "No, it's not sinful. You know, if that cow is being slaughtered to provide food," and he said it with a lot of like enthusiasm, like he really is making food for children, for women, for human beings. You know, that's okay. So he couldn't get it, basically. And Papa made some other point, and he's trying to. Slaughterhouses should be stopped. He said, as long as you have that, you don't even have a human society, and because it's sinful. And if you're sinful, you can't understand about God. And then his response was, it's not a central point. It's not a central point, you know. And what's important is to love God. And I think Prabhupada's closing thing was, he gave him this example about... if a man, here's a hypothetical situation. A man has two sons. One son is a high court judge, and the other son is just some ordinary, you know, laborer or whatever, something like that. Not very qualified. So, if the judge who's the high court son comes to the father and says, "Your other son is useless. Let me just kill him and eat him." Is the father going to be okay with that? And, if, you know, of course, he wouldn't be. So, you know, in other words, Prabhupada tried different ways, you know, logically, scripturally, by giving examples to get this guy to understand that, you know, you shouldn't do that. It's sinful. It's, you know, it's inhumane. It's cruel. It's sinful, et cetera. He couldn't. But anyway, somehow or another, We fortunately understand that the followers of Srila Prabhupada have been able to understand that point, and we're, you know, living accordingly. And I'd like to, as an example of that, I'll play an excerpt from a song, actually, that was composed and sung by a follower of Srila Prabhupada, Titiksha Karunika, which illustrates this point. Okay.
See the little fawn move too fast and she'll be gone. She knows to run away when the hunter comes to spoil her play. Have mercy on the animals. They have feels. just like we do. Mother cow's out in the field, so much milk she can yield. Father bull, he tills the land, providing grain for beast and man. Have mercy on the animals. They have feelings too. Have mercy on the animals.
So anyway, yeah, he ends the psalm by saying, have mercy on the animals, and mercy will be shown to you. So very, very powerful, you know. I thought it was kind of appropriate for today's, what I was talking about. So does anybody have any questions? Archie DePippo, yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a nice class. This point you're making about the animals resonates with us, obviously, but a lot of people would not agree with you that they're in the Murghari Sampradaya, because they're very, very conscious of the suffering of animals, and they respond like anything. There's one site called nextdoor.com where people, you know, post things that are happening in the neighborhood. And if somebody posts that there's a dog on the corner, looks like it's homeless, and somebody will run, oh, I'll take it. Or I'm moving to Texas and I can't take my dog. Well, somebody, oh, yes, I'll take it. They're very, very responsive to the suffering of animals. But it's based on sentiment. It's not based on spiritual values. As a matter of fact, they're more responsive to animal suffering than human suffering. A lot of them. So the way I get through to them, especially when I speak in schools, is if I'm hungry, I ask, does anybody have a pet? And most of them say yes. Say, what do you have? Goldfish, cat, dog, whatever? Yeah. If I'm hungry and I come to your door and say, can I kill your Doberman and eat it? I'm really hungry. You'd probably kill me. So they're very attached to the animals, but they don't care because it's sentiment. They don't really care because it's sentiment. They'll go to the store and buy the body of another animal to feed their animal. Or they will feed their animal and then they will go to McDonald's and buy the body of the cow to eat for themselves. So it's all based on sentiment. So we need to break through that sentimental attachment by giving them real spiritual values. They would not agree with you that they're cruel like Murghari. They wouldn't go to the forest and half kill a this or that. If they're hunters, they want to kill it right away, skin it, gut it, take it home and eat it. They're not in the Murghari Sampradaya. But it's all based on sentiment. It's not based on the reality of spiritual knowledge.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good point. I stand corrected. Thank you. That was a good comment. Anybody else have anything? Okay, Govinda Basha.
What was the name of that song, Have Mercy on the Animals? Is that the title of the song?
Yeah, okay. That's the title of the song. Okay, Bhakti Emil.
No. Hare Krishna. What's the point of view of the Hare Krishna movement about nowadays that kind of the dairy industry took over also the cruelty part? So like if you have a cow at home, it's okay. There's no problem eating the milk. But now it's like the industry of milk, it's another subject. Do you have anything to say about that?
Okay, yeah. About a month ago, I was with Archita. We were coming back from this trip, American Academy of Religions thing. Anyway, I was asking about that, if he was a vegan or if he just only drank milk from, you know, protected cows. And he said something which I thought was, you know, legit. He made the point that when the milk we are drinking is from living cows, the cows are alive when they give that milk, obviously. And it says in the Krishna book that when, you know, something like a tree even or gives its fruit or a cow gives its milk or anything that gives and it's used in Krishna's service, that living entity gets benefited. And So I think that's legitimate. I mean, it's not going to stop, you know, this cruelty to the animals. But neither is not drinking the milk. That's not going to stop the cruelty either. And there is some Shastra support for that, you know. And I think it's a legitimate sentiment or whatever practice that, you know, that milk is coming from these different animals. If, when it's used in Krishna's service, they get some benefit from doing that. There's more that can be said on it. It's a big subject. It's a controversial subject, even among devotees. And I don't think that what I've just said is by any means like, you know, the last word, a conclusive statement about it. But Archit did make that point to me, and I thought it's a valid point. So that's something you could think about. Anybody else have anything? Yeah, Martha.
We've spoken about envy and the animals which represent envy could be killed. But how do we treat people within whom there is envy? And what do we do when we discover envy within ourselves? It's probably a big topic, but... And also, I was recently said that the envy could be settled. Like, even if we think that someone is a better devotee than us, or like more sincere, and we feel that little envy towards that is like a different level settle of being envious.
Okay, that's like four questions. Okay, but that's okay. First one about somebody's envious. The Shastra says upeksha, neglect. If you can sense that somebody's just out and out envious, sometimes we meet people like that on Sankirtan. You know, you can see they just want to argue, they just want to find fault, and there's no point in trying to talk to them. They'll just suck your energy. You just, thank you, nice meeting you, and off you go. You go to upeksha, which means avoid them. In yourself, work on it. You know, preach to yourself, try to get rid of it as much as you possibly can. If you see like some other devotee and you're feeling like envious at that person, is try to transform it into admiration. You could glorify that person, do service for that person. That helps to mitigate or transform a feeling of envious into admiration. You know, serve and glorify that devotee to other devotees like that. Try to, you know, change that attitude. And what was the fourth one? Okay, that's it. Anyway, I covered three out of four. I can't remember what the fourth one was. Yeah, Madhava Mahotsava?
Just another animal, but then when human beings, I mean, first of all, they're not, because all the problems of the world, genocide and destruction of the environment on a massive scale, it's coming from human beings doing whatever, you know, extreme eating, sleeping, mating, and defending animal behavior. And then the scientific community turns around and goes, wait, control yourselves, we got to slow down, we got to do alternatives, you know. We were destroying the planet, you know. But then you told us that we're just a bunch of animals and, you know, should do whatever we feel like. Mm. So they shoot themselves in the foot. And then on top of it, they don't even address, like, the killing animal issue. Like, at the Aquarium of the Pacific, oh, the oceans are warming up. They don't say anything about, you know, slaughterhouses causing so much pollution and polluting the oceans, or the fact that 80% of the fish are being fished out of the ocean. They don't, because of people's eating habits, they don't even mention it. So it's like, there goes your whole argument there, you know. You can't give the solution. You can complain about it, but you never tell people what the solution is, because you're going to be in trouble if you speak the truth, you know. Mm. And it's like that too, even in the frozen planet. There's so many documentaries they make about, like, there's the destruction of the environment, and, you know, we're supposed to, we have to change our behavior, but they don't say stop eating meat. They just can't say that. And surprisingly, you know, the livestock, the animal industry is more polluting than automobiles, if you could believe it. But it's kind of hidden, you know, taking the slaughterhouse is kept out of sight. So people, they don't understand the truth.
Thank you. I come up a boo, and then we'll finish.
There's a very nice conversation between Narada Muni and King Yudhisthira in the seventh canto. And Narada Muni tells Yudhisthira that by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer over envy. And by good behavior and freedom from that envy, one can conquer over the sufferings due to other living beings. So the instruction is right there in the Bhagavatam. Everything is there. Sure. If you want to conquer this thing or that thing, you just simply take the instructions of the liberated souls like Narada Muni.
Do you have the reference right there? What canto is that? So
yeah, it's in the seventh canto.
Seventh canto.
Seventh canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, mm-hmm. where Narada Muni is instructing King Yudhisthira. And he's instructing him how to become free from this, 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 and that. And to conquer over envy, you stop sense gratification.
Okay, Jai. Well, perfect. Thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
See you on that.